listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Open source, grassroots, community, solar-powered radio.
Yes.
One of a kind.
All those things.
And this is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about gardening today, and we're about a month early here. I mean, about 4 weeks ahead of what we usually are. And the gardens are blooming. And I noticed, have you noticed that the spirea, the white spirea, is just gorgeous this year?
Is that what's also known as bridal's
wreath?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, everything.
Everything's been beautiful.
Beautiful and just amazingly early. It's a little
disconcerting.
Have you ever, in all your years of gardening, have you ever seen things this early, Mom?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. It's never been this warm this early. That's a few years, too.
Well, let's introduce our guest today.
Okay. Our guest is Cheryl Wilfong, and she's the author of our book today, The Meditative Gardener, Cultivating Mindfulness of Body, Feelings, and Mind. She discovered gardening the same year she attended her first retreat at Insight Meditation Society in 1977. She has a master's degree in counseling psychology from Antioch University, New England, with a concentration in mindfulness. She completed an internship with Jon Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness-based stress reduction program in 1999. She became a Vermont Master Gardener, and she's also a Master Composter.
Welcome to Writer's Voices, Cheryl.
Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Caroline.
Well, first, before we start talking about the book, I want to point out all of the awards that
this book has won. Yes.
It won the Nautilus Book Award. It was a Best Books Award finalist from USA Book News. It was a Next Generation finalist from Indie Book Awards. It was won the Benjamin Franklin Award from Independent Book Publishers Association and the Eric Hoffer Award in Excellence in Independent Publishing. Well, congratulations, Cheryl.
Thank you. And on the back of the book, you'll notice there's also an award for my blog, the Meditative Gardener.blogspot.com.
I do see that, and I actually printed out some of your blog posts this morning. It looks like you post every day.
I do travel some, and I go on retreat, so I don't post every day, but yes, I enjoy writing these short little blogs. So 6 days a week, I do write a blog, yes.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about why you do that and the results and how that interacts with the book later on in the program. But right now, why don't you tell us, what's this book about?
This book is about gardening and meditation, which are two of my passions. And I had quite a lot of fun writing this book because it draws the parallels between nature and human nature. I love using the metaphors of nature and gardening to point out some insights that those of us who are sort of spiritually inclined can sort of add to our store of wisdom.
Well, the book itself is gorgeous. I mean, it's
it is a beautiful book.
Two of the awards are for design. I was very happy. My book designers, who are local to me and people I know, they really brought my intention into physical form in a way that was better than I imagined. So I'm very grateful to the book designers.
Well, let's talk about that and how you found your book designers, how you chose them, and how you worked with them, because that's in this type of book, which has full color photographs on it virtually every page, that's obviously a big part of the process of producing this book. So
yes.
Let's start with the photographs. Where are the photographs from?
Okay, the book photographs are from local to me photographers. I live in Vermont, and you know, there are a lot of artists around, maybe starving artists. there are several artists there in Fairfield as well.
And, oh, yes.
I did have to do a little shopping. Stop me if I'm going on too long here. But I had to do a little shopping for photographers who would, in a sense, really take me seriously and go shoot on location. It was a risk for them time-wise, not knowing exactly where this was going to wind up. Some people have that kind of time and that kind of energy and that kind of direction, and others don't.
So essentially the photographs were all taken just for this book?
No, there was one photographer who was very good at shooting on like location. Another photographer, his hobby is to go with his wife, his British wife, to English gardens and take pictures of flowers.
Ah, so he had a stock.
They were both meditators, so they had a stock. Boy, he had through hundreds and thousands of his photos. That was great.
Well, I noticed that, for instance, on one page there's a picture that you don't often see that perspective because it's...
We're looking at page 33, and I think it's a very up-close picture of marigolds.
But from underneath, kind of, and it's really something.
It is, yeah.
It makes you realize how really beautiful these simple flowers are when you look at them from different perspectives.
And
so my goal for the book was that just holding the book in your hands would be a calming experience. Might even be a meditative experience, and in this way, I think the designers really met and excelled my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cheryl, in the shots that were on location, how involved were you in setting up the shot and deciding what was to be photographed?
I wasn't that involved in setting up the shot. I had a list of photos that I was particularly looking for. I gave that list to, a dozen or more photographers, and some people were, this one photographer in particular, was able to just take that list and shoot for it.
Great. Now, a lot of our listeners are writers, and I'm sure that some of them are interested in doing books that require photographs and photography. What kind of financial arrangements, you know, you don't have to get specific, but like, do you pay by the picture or did you pay by the hour or how did you arrange that?
I took the sort of what I understood to be the going rate, which was, I think about $125 for a full page photo. I lowered that a little bit, I was in the range, but also looking out for my own bottom line. I paid the photographers accordingly. There are some stock photos in this, and the stock photos would be for somebody who's really has to keep a tight line, tight rein on the bottom line. Stock photos would be the way to go. I ethically, I felt I needed to reimburse these photographers for their time.
And so you paid up front, not knowing really how many books.
No, I waited. The photographer who shot on location and shot the photos I wanted, she did charge sort of upfront as photos were decided on to be included. Then that went against her total. The other photographers, a couple of them were friends who just sort of like, oh, here, use these pictures if you can. So when the book was finally published, I went through the book and tallied whose photo was who and was able to send checks to those friends who had trusted me.
That's really, I bet they were pleasantly surprised.
They were pleasantly surprised. I did go to, I'm a member of the Garden Writers Association, and part of that Garden Writers Association is some number of photographers. I did meet with one photographer, and garden photographer, who was really excellent. And as I told him my book proposal, I could just about see him rolling his eyes like, oh no, I'm not gonna... He just couldn't make the commitment to me, not knowing. It was too big a risk, not knowing me personally, you know, whether the time he invested would be worth his while.
Right. So in a sense, the arrangements you made with the photographers were they did it on spec, but once the book was published, then they got paid.
Yes.
Yes, okay. And how many photographs total would you say are in the book?
There's 254 photos on 256 pages.
Wow. So that's a lot of photographs.
Yeah. That's a lot of photographs, and that might lead us into another conversation if you're interested, which is no publisher was willing to publish that sort of photo-rich sort of book, and that's what led me into self-publishing.
Because the print costs are so high? Is that why they're reluctant to do it?
Yes, because the print costs of a color book are so high, yes.
Okay, yes, I'd love to talk about this. And for those just tuning in, we're talking to Cheryl Wilfong, who is the author of The Meditative Gardener, Cultivating Mindfulness of Body, Feelings, and Mind, which is a beautiful book that brings lessons from gardening to the meditator and lessons from meditating to the gardener. So, yes, yeah, so let's actually stay a little bit more on the design, because we talked about choosing the photographs, and then let's go with the design, and then we'll go into the self-publishing aspect. So did you have a single designer for the entire book, and how?
Yes, or I had a single designer. She has sort of a deep resume of designing books for Wisdom Publications and Shambhala Publications, mm-hmm. and these are publishers of Buddhist books. This is a Buddhist book, but you don't have to be Buddhist to read it or to enjoy it. And I've been surprised that some of my friends who I know are never going to meditate and how they've enjoyed the book. But because she had this experience with Beacon Press, David Godin, who is a sort of a specialty publisher, and many other publishers, she was my designer of choice, and she lives just in the small town that I live in. So, and she has a stable of about four graphic designers, and one of those has now accompanied me through all my marketing, all the ads, and she's really just right there. I tell her what I need, and she gives it to me, and it's great.
You just about have to have somebody that knows what they're doing in that arena, don't you, to be able to succeed in this?
Well, you know, I'm a do-it-yourselfer, you know. I wasn't quite a back-to-the-lander back there in those, you know, in the 70s. I like to do it myself. And I just don't have this kind of time anymore. And learning curve for all these techno things is quite steep. So, yes, I would highly recommend hiring somebody who knows these programs. Not everybody has that luxury to be able to do that.
Right. And they, I assume, work on a fee basis. Was it a speculative also, or was that like you were going to pay them no matter what?
I did try to pay the designer as we went along. She's one of these people who's like a little bit loose on the financial end of things. So, so sometimes it would be months in between bills.
Wow. And Did the cost exceed your expectations, like things normally do with these sort of things? Or
Yes. You've got bingo.
Yep. It's like building a house. I have never heard of anyone building a house for what their original budget was.
Yes, yeah. Right. And, you know, I would say that publishing and self-publishing a book is another sink for both time and money.
So had you published a book before, any books before?
Yes. I wrote a book, Following the Nez Perce Trail, that was published by Oregon State University Press and came out in a second edition in 2006.
Okay, so you had experience working with a small publisher, a university publisher. Was that your first choice for this book, was something like that?
So, my first choice, I went to this Wisdom Publications and met with the editor. And he said, you know, these meditations in here, meditations have to be pitch perfect. It's just too risky. But we'd look at a manuscript of gardening essays. And I sort of looked at him thinking, I'm not writing gardening essays. Have that book. So this has actually been one of the things that has driven my blog, is that now after 2.5 years of writing a blog, I could come up with a book of gardening essays.
You definitely, that's one of the, you're right, one of the advantages of blogging. First of all, it keeps you writing.
Yes, it does.
And over a period of time, you're going to end up with some material to work with.
Right, yeah, I love the exercise of, and we can go into the blog either now or later. I'll let you guide that. And I'll tell you my theory of blogging.
Okay, well, let's discuss a little bit more about the self-publishing, and then we'll segue into blogging. So, again, for those just tuning in, this is Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Cheryl Wilfong, the author of The Meditative Gardener. So you went to that publisher. Did you try some others before you decided to strike out on your own?
The thing about my book designer was, because she had worked with so many publishers, she sort of had backdoor entry. So, for instance, she knew she had designed a book for Rodale, so she talked to the people at Rodale, and because it's a gardening book.
Right.
And when that person said, you know, we would have to publish 20,000 books to make it worth our while. That's when it's like, oh, yeah, this book, I don't expect to sell 20,000 copies.
Mm.
I see why they can't, you know, why a publisher couldn't take it. And then the price point of something like Story Publications, another garden publisher, you look at their books, and they're like $12.95 and $16.95. This book was not going to, like, meet that sort of price point at all.
Right. So you decided to self-publish. What was the first thing you had to learn?
Fortunately, my book designer sort of walked through it. She had a sense of what sort of paper to use, and she was I smiled when I heard that your radio station is solar powered. So the paper used in this is was made powered by wind, so she had a sense of all this greenness, and that in itself is a selling point. I have to say, that's something I would not have thought of.
Right.
And she picked a local printer, local to me, Vermont printer, and that's partly of my own values. I just could not, in good conscience, ship it off to China. I probably could ship it off to India, but I made the more expensive decision.
Right, and of course, if you ship it off, it has to be shipped back.
Correct. And so, yeah, there's a big, long lead time on all of that.
Right, right. And so you did this, you didn't go with the print-on-demand type
of
printing.
No, in 2010 when this was printed, the print-on-demand, the for color, was just coming in. The first 500 copies were print-on-demand. That was really quite expensive.
Mm.
So, yes, you're right. I did not go for print-on-demand.
Okay.
So I have the inventory of books sitting at a distributor's.
And how do you go about marketing and distributing?
So the distributor links me up to Amazon and Ingram, Ingram being the big sort of guerrilla distributor that the bookstores
Right.
They're looking at on their computers when you say when you order a book at your independent bookstore, so for marketing now, I don't know about your audience, but I myself am an introvert. I live at the end of a dirt road, and I sort of like it that way. So just going out and meeting people. Not really my forte. So I try to do my marketing somewhat indirectly via the blog, although I'm not confident how many people read the blog. Then I do Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And we can talk about all of those in more detail if you wish. And I have, I did put some ads in Shambhala Sun. It has a readership of about 75,000 because that would sort of meet my, I could find my audience there.
Well, we have a pretty good listenership, I think, don't we?
Right, and I think you'll...
If they could just once see this book and read even a couple pages, I mean, it's just full of really peaceful approaches to life, and that's what we need now. Desperately.
Yes, and if we go to the garden, if we don't, even if we're not a gardener, if we just go outdoors,
mm-hmm.
There's a relaxation just walking through the park, walking
right.
down the neighborhood street with other people's gardens.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to mention the URL of your blog again for some people who may have missed that. It's themeditativegardener.blogspot.com. And you can see the book, you can see Cheryl's writing here, and I assume you can order the book right from that blog.
Order the book right there on the blog. Also, a very easy thing to do is just go to Facebook and like The Meditative Gardener.
All right.
And then that will sort of, I post a condensed version of the blog every day, and so that'll sort of link you back to the blog. And
And I did that this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Notice in the book, I found this little package of seeds, planting seeds of kindness and mindfulness.
You're right. This is one of my favorite marketing tools.
It's wonderful. So it's a packet of seeds designed as a postcard.
Right.
That can be sent through the mail as a postcard, and it's wonderful. Really a charming idea.
It is, definitely.
So this is part of marketing. But as part of the Garden Writers Association, and maybe some of your writers are members of other sorts of writers' association, I get, I used to get more mailings. Now the mailings are coming as e-mailings. Like beautiful postcard announcements of books. Oh my gosh, the cover was beautiful. I'd look at it, and then I'd throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And so my hope with sending out seeds, packets of seeds to gardeners, was that they wouldn't quite be able to throw a packet of seeds away, and that it just might be able to sit on a shelf. It's like, oh yeah, there's that packet of seeds. Oh yeah, the meditative gardener. That it would just over time, maybe next year or the year after, remind somebody of the book. That's That's my hope.
I believe that's a good and accurate hope. How do you decide who to send these to?
I sent the seeds originally to the Garden Writers Association. That was about 900 active members. I've sent it out to yoga centers, to various meditation centers. You know, in retrospect, I'm not sure that that was cost effective. It did get me some book reviews in some unexpected newspapers. Not that many, but a few. So now I enjoy having, I've just ordered my second round of seed packets, which I'm now thinking more of as my business card. Mm-hmm. Again, a business card that's sort of out of the box because it's a packet of seeds.
Right.
Well, as you said, you know, people will keep these most likely, and maybe they're on the shelf, but think of the joy that they will have if they plant these.
Right, yes, or they can give them away to a gardening friend if they don't use them themselves.
Right.
So, so anytime I'm in a group of any size, I sort of feel like Santa Claus, or I don't know if you ever read a children's book, the lupin lady who scattered lupin seeds throughout Maine. So I sort of feel like Thrumpius, the lupin lady.
Or Johnny Appleseed. Yeah, Johnny Appleseed, a historical figure, no doubt. Maybe someday you will be an historical figure for having distributed all these beautiful flower seeds. Well, you never know.
Now, are you into seed collection?
I'm sorry, ask again.
Are you into seed collection? Do you collect seeds from your own garden?
Oh, yes. Of course I collect seeds. Yes, I'm that kind of a gardener. It's part of my do-it-yourselfer comes out in, why should I buy nasturtium seeds when I can collect my own? Or marigold seeds, I could collect my own. Now, whether or not I get around to planting them next spring, that's a different story. But, poppy seeds, sort of the easy-to-collect ones I do. I don't collect vegetable seeds very often, but I am happy to report that my Russian red kale has reseeded itself.
Ah, good for it.
I really rely on plants that reseed themselves, that volunteer in the garden.
Well, 2 years ago, I planted an edible pea that's yellow. It's a golden edible pea.
Oh, really?
And I saved, though, you know, peas are very easy to save, the seeds, you know. And because, particularly if you don't get around to picking everything and they dry on the vine. And I saved them and I planted them the next year. And then I think the ones I have are still from that first year. And I planted them again and they came up this year, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
I'm really happy about that. So, Cheryl, let's move on to talk about your blog, which is a very important aspect, as you say, of your marketing, but also perhaps as your writing practice.
Yes. Yeah. So my theory of blog, unproved by anyone, but my theory of blog is to keep it above the scroll. You know, in the newspapers they say keep it above the fold, or what's above the fold is the most important. And I think our attention spans are so short nowadays with the information avalanche that we have, that my goal is to keep my blog above the scroll. Now, I don't maybe literally do that, but I try to keep it very short and in a more newspaper fashion of maybe two sentences per paragraph. My formula, which other writers may recognize, is that I start with a garden image, and then I move it in the second paragraph into a meditation related, sort of a spiritual or inspiration related parallel or metaphor, And then in the last paragraph, tie it all together. So that's my formula.
Would you like to read a sample blog post for us?
I don't have my blog right at my hand.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I will.
Yeah.
Do you mind?
Please do.
Okay. So this is from yesterday, Thursday, April 19th. Spring springs up. Fiddlehead ferns are unfurling. It's time to eat spring. In the herb garden, the French sorrel is ready to leap into a lemony soup, and the Egyptian or walking onion somersault into salads, stir-fry skillets, and sauces of all sorts. We have some alliteration going on there.
Yeah.
The lawn grows violets and dandelion greens in profusion, perfect for a spring tonic salad. In pockets of lime-rich soil in the woods, wild leeks grow in abundance. Change is happening at a rapid rate as spring springs up all around us. How do you feel about change?
I like that somersaults into the...
And that was posted at 7:04 a.m., so I'm guessing that you're an early riser.
I am an early riser, so my routine is to often wake up before dawn and... meditate for an hour, and then so there's something I like about writing after meditation. So then I try not to get on the computer before about 7 o'clock. Post my blog. I post a condensed version of the blog onto Facebook. I copy the same thing from Facebook onto LinkedIn, and then I condense it even more into the 140 characters of Twitter, and then I leave my computer.
Ah.
Go meditate with my neighbors.
Okay. Now, I'm gonna ask Caroline to read another one, because the one I chose really didn't illustrate your format that you were talking about as well as this next one.
Okay, this is that from?
Yes.
Wednesday, yeah. Okay. Impermanence has struck again. The logger cut down 6 trees yesterday in my side yard, which was really only an herb garden, is now quite spacious and airy. Sometimes it's time to clear away portions of our life, relinquish a toxic relationship, turn loose of some responsibilities or a volunteer job, renounce an addictive habit, opt out of email newsletters. Even though letting go is difficult, we are rewarded with a feeling of, now we can breathe again. Now we can see the forest for the trees. In my side yard, some trees have been sacrificed. Now I can see more clearly. The rain is gone.
Yeah, that's a good example of the format that Cheryl was talking about. So, Cheryl, do you feel like you're getting some results from this marketing formula with the blog, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter?
I can only say that it's anecdotal. As I said, I'm not really confident. How many people read a blog? I mean, there's so many blogs out there. But people do comment, friends. See me and they say, oh, I loved that blog the other day. Somebody even called me up 6 weeks ago and said, the day I wrote about an aging geranium and how leggy and sort of woody they get, and she said, you know, I feel just like an aging geranium myself.
That's great.
So, yeah, so just in those anecdotal ways, I know that there are a few people who are quite loyal and do read the blog every day. And then I look at Facebook, see who has commented. I try to respond to comments. And then usually, a few people, a handful of people like the posting every day. And I can see... in Facebook's new format, who those people were. I can see who has recently liked my page, and so my numbers creep up slowly but surely. And only about half of my 700 likes are from people I know, and who the other half are, the other 350 or 400 people, I don't know who they are, but I'm happy that they like to read these little Facebook posts.
Well, I can see a couple of, kind of good results from doing this, or a couple of reasons to continue. And one is that perhaps it is motivating to get feedback from your writing on an ongoing basis like that, to know that you're somebody, even if it's a small number, is paying attention and is reading what you're writing. Does that help keep you writing day after day?
I'm really not thinking so much about the reader. I'm gratified. I'm extremely gratified when people do respond or say, "Oh yes, I go to your blog." We all know what posts on Facebook can look like, various political commentaries and various irritations and comments about the dog going to the veterinarian or whatever. And so my goal is really to keep it at a more inspirational heart level of post, and to sort of raise the bar on the conversation, so to speak.
And then, of course, we've talked to a number of writers about this, that when you do go to look for a publisher, either an independent publisher or a mainstream publisher, that having a platform is increasingly important in the ability to find a publisher. And
right, and whether or not... Yes, I will agree with you. I will say, let me go back and talk about self-publishing from sort of a slightly different angle. When Oregon State University Press accepted my first manuscript and then asked me to update it, they published it, and I sort of just wiped my hands against each other. There, done. I don't have to do anything else. The good thing about self-publishing is that it really forces me to keep my finger on the pulse of how many books are selling and what do I want to do to support the sales. There's a slight pressure of having this monthly bill from the distributor come in. So I'm paying for these books to be warehoused. I'm paying for boxes of books. Now, for most people who have just a black and white book with maybe a few illustrations, the print-on-demand means that you don't have to pay for these boxes of books being housed.
Right, right. So, Cheryl, would you like to read a section from The Meditative Gardener for our listeners today?
Sure. I'm going to read from page 8. One friend really does like to garden. Here, she experienced her garden as a burden. There is so much work to do, and she doesn't have time. She likes to do everything right, which means reading up on which manure is best or which mulch is best, and then trying to find a source for it. She carefully reads about when to plant which vegetable seed. She likes to follow directions. She wants to garden correctly. She also likes to talk things through with her husband and come to an agreement on who does what when. In the midst of all this doing and organizing for doing, she lost her goodwill toward her picture-perfect vegetable garden. After taking a long break from gardening for some years, she eventually settled on having a flower bed beside her front door. There. That satisfies her desire to garden. It looks good, and it isn't too much to do. Now she enjoys going out to the garden again. Having goodwill toward the garden is important, but even more important is having goodwill toward the gardener, say, yourself. The gardener of your garden is doing the best she can. using her time and knowledge to the best of her abilities. She may not get all the weeding done, or all the seeds planted, or all the plants watered, but she's doing the best she can under the circumstances. She labors in your garden for the sheer love of it. Sometimes gardening can be challenging, but we don't go to the garden to be bothered by people or insects or plants. We go for enjoyment, for the pleasure of being in the garden, and maybe just to get away from it all for a little while. If we practice goodwill toward ourselves as gardeners, our gardens will benefit. Let's begin now with the practice of goodwill toward our garden and goodwill toward our gardener, ourselves.
Thank you, Cheryl. That was Cheryl Wilfong reading from The Meditative Gardener, Cultivating Mindfulness of Body, Feelings, and Mind. Cheryl, who is this book for?
This book is for beginning meditators, people who are just sort of getting established. It's got a lot of very simple, short practices. It's for seasoned meditators, people who have a lot of experience, because it can really refresh their practice by adding in some new things of interest. And it's for lapsed meditators, people who have tried meditating and then it falls off the radar screen. This is very common. People think they'd like to meditate and they start, they stop, they start, they stop. And I won't even say they, I will say this is the way I as well. I started, I stopped, I started, I stopped. So for people who would like to replant a meditation practice in their life, this is also good. And as I mentioned earlier, people who are maybe just armchair gardeners, not really maybe all that interested in meditation, that just sitting in a lawn chair holding this book in your hands is a meditation experience, just do that. Give it to a friend who's never going to meditate. That's fine, too.
Of course, there are many people who have no access to soil, have no access to garden place, live in a city.
Yes.
So, one I
have enjoyed, there are many, nowadays there are many programs in the prisons which teach meditation to prisoners, and I enjoy sending free copies to the people who are going into prisons to teach meditation, because I figure those prisoners will really enjoy looking at these pictures.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes.
Now, in addition to the book, Cheryl, you've recorded meditations and even a workbook for people to log their own experiences. Why did you do this, and how have readers responded, and how do they get access to these?
Okay, the guided meditations are on my website, meditativegardener.com, and since I am a meditation teacher, I teach at Vermont Insight Meditation Center, I know that beginning meditators, it's sort of hard to, when you don't exactly know what you're doing, to you keep opening one eye, what's the next direction? And so, particularly nowadays when everybody has an iPod or whatever, the smartphones, and you can just download these meditations and listen to them as you're jogging, taking a walk, out in your garden. In a sense, these guided meditations are sort of very much more easy and easily heard than read.
Mm.
The notebook is... it's actually another one of my marketing tools. This is a print-on-demand book, so this is my this is both a money maker when it sells, and its cost is low enough that I can give it away as a marketing tool. So it's just, it's a, just has quotes from the Meditative Gardener at the bottom of each page, and with blank space to write down gardening insights, meditation insights, or anything else you wish that you would use a journal for.
Many meditation practitioners believe they need to sit still to meditate, but you seem to feel there are many different ways to reach this contemplative state using our five senses. And can you talk about that a little bit?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because yes, people do think that meditation happens on the cushion or on a chair, so to say. My goal is really to bring mindfulness into the rest of our lives. And since I like the garden, this is a book about bringing mindfulness to the garden, bringing it out to our lives so that we can practice mindfulness while we are walking, while we are standing, holding the hose perhaps. When I'm teaching meditation, I suggest people practice standing meditation when they are at the post office or the grocery store. Just be mindful of standing. It's also possible to practice lying down meditation.
Oh, in your book, then the picture that goes with that is of a very tall tree with a huge trunk, and like you're lying under it looking up. That's so cool.
Yes, I do like to take a nap every afternoon,
yeah.
And taking it out in the yard is rather delicious.
You know, the strength of that tree, of the strength of any tree, but the strength of that tree is empowering. It really is.
Yes. Thank you for noting that. And so, as we're out in the garden, you referred to the senses. Mm-hmm. You know, what a great opportunity to notice sight, notice seeing, that we are seeing these beautiful things, to notice the hearing of birds, or perhaps of traffic, the traffic going by on the street, to notice taste, when we pick that first cherry tomato, or pull that first carrot, that first pea pod. Notice the joy. So also noticing the touch sensations of, you know, there are leaves that are smooth and leaves that are rough. Some are prickly. Some are sort of fuzzy. So all of those. And lying down in the herb garden, well, I say the herb garden because that's where my aromatic plants are, but in the fragrance garden, just smelling the fragrance of the lavender, the mint, whatever you have out there.
Right now, as at my house, as you're walking up to the front door, you can smell the lily of the valley.
Oh, I love those. My grandmother had a bed of those beside her front step.
They have gone crazy this year.
Everything has gone crazy this year.
Are you having as beautiful a spring in Vermont as we are here in Iowa?
Oh, yes, we are, I would say, 3 weeks ahead.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's what we are, at least. Right?
At least, yeah.
Well, okay, here's an interesting question. Do you think the thoughts we have while we are planting affect the plants?
You know, I think the thoughts we have, I can't say whether they affect the plants. The plants' consciousness, so to say, is... Well, I don't know. It might be pretty mild, but I can say that the thoughts we have affect ourselves.
Yes. Mm. Well, I've always talked to my plants, my house plants. I've always talked to them.
Yes, and I actually talk to my plants too. Our thoughts may or may not. I think the important thing is that they affect ourselves, because our thoughts precede our words.
Mm-hmm.
Our words might go precede or go along with our deeds. This behavior will then harden into character. And so the thoughts are the beginning spot. And let's go out to the garden and practice thoughts of calmness if it comes up. maybe just 1 second at a time.
Were you influenced by Peter Tompkins' book, The Secret Life of Plants?
No, I was not. I did take a look at that while I was writing this book. No, were you influenced by it?
Well, just the idea that plants communicate with each other, and I actually have had an experience many years ago, which is one of the strongest spiritual experiences I ever had, which was with a weed.
Okay, let's hear that.
Communicating with a weed. You talk in the book about how our feelings about weeds and kind of identifying how you feel about various weeds. And of course, one of the most noxious weeds around here is Creeping Charlie.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and it goes everywhere. And it creeps in vines along the ground. And I had an experience many years ago of weeding a flower bed, I'm working on the Creeping Charlie, and I felt like it was leaping into my hand, that it was ready to be removed. It knew it didn't belong there, and it was just like leaping, and it was just an experience of great ease.
Interesting.
In weeding that, yeah.
Wow, beautiful.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, there are a lot of weeds out there. I saw in the paper the other day the noxious weeds that the farmers are supposed to eradicate if they find them along in their ditches and so forth. There's a lot of them out there.
Now, Cheryl, I noticed you talk about the importance of your friends in your practice and in your life, and how does that translate into gardening?
Well, I think we all know the importance of having friends whom we admire, as parents or grandparents. You know, we certainly can see this in teenagers, whether our own teenagers or someone else. We just cross our fingers that in junior high and high school that they have good friends who will lead them in the right direction, because we've seen examples of friends leading children, perhaps our own loved ones, leading them astray. So even in our adulthood, having friendships that on the track of where we want to be going. I meditate every morning with a couple of my neighbors, and this is the track that I want to be on. Having these women, because we've been doing this for 15 years, so we know each other pretty thoroughly by now, and to bring up life's little issues and to have somebody say, "Cheryl, I don't think you should say that. I think you should just hold your horses." Like, oh yes, that's the voice of wisdom. That's where I want to aim toward. So, having being around good people whom we admire, is extremely important for our spiritual life.
And is it important to pay attention to what plants are grouped together in the garden? How they're influencing one another?
I think you could find, there are lots of gardening books on this subject.
Yeah, there are.
What I'm coming to for myself is I'm just going with the plants that grow there, that sort of naturally grow or volunteer in my garden. Because I have tried and planting many, many different kinds of plants. I want this plant, and I want it to grow here, but it's got a different idea. That's not really the best place for it, and I've lost a lot of plants. I've lost a lot of money in the garden.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Exactly.
As perhaps we all have.
Yeah. Yes.
Right now, what loves to grow and volunteers for me are all these varieties of mullein. Now, you know mullein, that tall, stocky thing with the great fuzzy leaves that grows along the roadside. I have some ornamental varieties of that, a white variety, and it's really quite beautiful, tall with those same gray fuzzy leaves, as well as some other varieties. It's like, okay, Mullen, if you want to grow here, and have at it.
Sometimes I think the only difference between a flower and a weed is that the weed grows easily.
And everywhere.
Because if dandelions were hard to grow, we would think they were absolutely beautiful.
True.
Yeah, or the story that is in my book that people from other countries who immigrate to this country and see dandelions think they're beautiful.
Oh, yes.
Or know what it is. So, it's only a thought, really, that says, oh, no, dandelions. Because the first, that cheery little yellow blossom, it is pretty cute.
It is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You know,
those are fun.
People that don't have access to gardens, when they drive along the highway or any road in Iowa, in dirt road or so forth, we have the wildflowers. We have the blue flax. We have the wild phlox.
Daylilies.
Daylilies.
Yeah.
A number of things. Beautiful, beautiful flowers.
We've been talking today with Cheryl Wilfong, the author of The Meditative Gardener, Cultivating Mindfulness of Body, Feelings, and Mind. We're about out of time, Cheryl. Can you tell us, are you working on any new writing projects now?
I would love to be working on a new writing project. But I have to say, to repeat what I said earlier, the marketing I'm finding to be a big sinkhole of time.
So let's help Cheryl out, and I'll go check out her blog.
Yeah. Right, and buy her book, because it is a beautiful, beautiful piece. It really is.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to meditating in the garden.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'll see you there.
Goodbye. And stay tuned now if you're listening on Friday for Planet Erstwhile with James Moore. And if you're listening on Monday morning at 8 a.m., which is when we're rebroadcast, have a great week. And Caroline, do you have some closing words of wisdom for us?
I do. This is actually from the book, The Meditative Gardener, and it was a quote from Hugh Johnson. No two gardens are the same, and no two days are the same in one garden. How true. Never thought of that before. How true.
See you next week on Writer's Voices when we're talking to Frankie Meink, the author of The Autobiography of a Recovering Skinhead.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.